Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going all the way back to ancient India,
Ooh, okay.
around the 6th century BCE,
Yeah.
to explore the story of Siddhartha Gautama,
Fascinating guy.
the man who became the Buddha.
It's a really amazing story. And it's not just about the origins of Buddhism, it gives us a lot to think about.
I think so too. Like even today, thousands of years later,
Right.
it still offers these insights into what it means to be human,
Yeah.
our struggles, aspirations.
Definitely.
Those big questions.
Yeah. And to kick off this deep dive, we've got a fantastic collection of sources, articles, biographies, even some ancient texts
Ooh, nice.
to paint a really vivid picture of Siddhartha's world and the ideas that influenced his journey.
It's key to understand the context, because this was a time of intense change in ancient India.
Oh, absolutely.
Society was shifting from nomadic life to settled agriculture.
Wow, that's a huge transition.
Yeah, it really impacted everything, social structures, spiritual beliefs.
I bet. So let's set the stage. Imagine ancient India.
A civilization in flux. What was the spiritual landscape like back then?
Well, you've got to think. When your whole way of life changes, it's going to lead to uncertainty, anxieties. People are searching for answers, trying to make sense of everything, their place in the world,
Makes sense.
the mysteries of life and death.
Right. So what were they turning to for guidance during this time?
This is where the Vedas come in. They were like the spiritual foundation of ancient India.
Oh, the Vedas.
Yeah, the bedrock for what we know as Hinduism.
Didn't we do a deep dive on those a while back?
We did. And it's super relevant here because they're crucial to understanding Siddhartha's journey.
Okay, true.
The Vedas are this incredible collection of hymns, prayers, and philosophical insights.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they shaped Indian culture for centuries.
Okay, so remind me, what were some of the core concepts in the Vedas?
Well, there's Brahman. You can think of it as the ultimate reality, the cosmic ocean of existence.
I see.
Then there's Atman, the individual soul, like a spark of that divine Brahman. You've also got Dharma duty, righteous living, and then karma.
Action and consequence.
Exactly
Right,
right.
right. It's
Yeah.
all coming back to me now. So the Vedas were like the spiritual foundation.
Absolutely.
But you mentioned that society was undergoing this major transformation.
Yeah, it was a big shift.
Did that clash with these ancient beliefs?
It definitely created tension. So the Vedas also laid the groundwork for the caste
The
system.
caste system.
Yeah, which actually started as a more fluid division of labor.
Oh, interesting.
But as society settled and became more hierarchical, the caste system solidified into this really rigid structure,
Wow.
and it dictated every aspect of a person's life.
So on one hand, you have the spiritual system emphasizing unity and interconnectedness, and then on the other hand,
Yeah.
you have this social hierarchy that divides people into fixed categories.
It created a lot of inner conflict for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like a recipe for some serious inner turmoil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is the world Siddhartha Gautama was born into.
Okay, so he's born into this world of contrast.
Yes. He was a prince, living a life of total luxury, shielded from the hardships most people faced.
I see. So even surrounded by comfort and privilege,
Yeah.
he still felt like something was missing.
Absolutely. He felt this deep unease. He was troubled by those big questions we all face. The problem of suffering, the impermanence of life, the search for meaning.
It's like he had all the material wealth imaginable,
Yeah, he had it all.
but still felt this spiritual void.
Exactly. He was seeking something deeper. And the traditional Vedic answers,
They weren't enough.
they didn't seem to fully satisfy him.
So what did he do? I mean, did he just try to ignore these existential anxieties?
Nope, he did the opposite.
What I mean?
He confronted those questions head on.
Wow.
Think about it. He was a prince. He could have lived a life of ease and pleasure, but he chose to walk away from it all.
That's pretty radical.
Yeah, it was a big decision.
So what pushed him over the edge? Was there a turning point?
Well, there's the famous story of the Forsytes.
The force.
Yeah. Picture a young Siddhartha venturing outside his palace walls for the first time,
Okay.
and he encounters an old man, a sick person, a corpse, and then finally an ascetic.
Wow. Talk about a reality check.
It was like the bubble of his sheltered life burst.
Right. He's confronted with suffering and death.
Exactly. And for Siddhartha, it was a major wake-up call.
I bet.
He realized that suffering was universal. No one, not even a prince, could escape old age, sickness, and death.
It's like a sudden awareness of the fragility of
Oh,
life.
yes. And that was the catalyst for his great renunciation.
The great renunciation.
He left his princely life behind.
Wow.
To dedicate himself to finding a path out of suffering.
Okay, so he abandons his palace and sets off on this spiritual quest.
Yeah, he's on a mission.
What did that look like? Where did he go? What did he do?
So initially, he followed the traditional path of asceticism.
Asceticism.
Yeah, seeking wisdom from renowned teachers, putting himself through extreme practices, fasting, deprivation.
So he went from a life of luxury to a life of self-denial.
It's like he was going from one extreme to the other.
Testing the boundaries.
Exactly. He spent years in deep meditation, pushing himself to the limits, searching for answers.
But that didn't lead to liberation.
Even those extreme practices didn't bring him the freedom he was looking for.
So what happened? When did he realize that asceticism wasn't the answer?
It was a process, but there's a key moment when he collapses from exhaustion.
Oh, wow.
He'd been fasting for years.
Oh, years.
And a young woman offers him some milk rice.
Just simple milk rice.
Yeah. And that act of kindness, it helped him realize that neither extreme self-indulgence nor extreme self-denial was the way to go.
So it was about balance.
Exactly. He realized the answer lay in moderation.
A middle path.
Yes. He called it the middle way. A balanced, mindful approach to life.
I'm already seeing some powerful insights here. True liberation isn't about escaping the world.
I think so, too.
It's about finding a way to live authentically in the midst of it all.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And that realization. This embrace of the middle way. It seems like a turning point for Siddhartha.
Absolutely. It was a shift away from the traditional path.
To a new approach to spiritual seeking.
One focused on balance, compassion, understanding the human condition.
And this is where things get even more interesting.
It is.
Because this shift sets the stage for his enlightenment the moment he becomes the Buddha. But that's a story for part two of our deep dive. Welcome back to our deep dive into the life of Siddhartha Gautama. So last time, we left off with Siddhartha rejecting those extremes, right? The extremes of luxury and asceticism.
Yeah, he found that middle ground.
Yeah, and he discovered this middle way.
Exactly.
This path of moderation, of balance.
It was a key to his next step.
And that next step was?
Achieving enlightenment.
Becoming the Buddha.
Becoming the Buddha, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about that pivotal moment. The moment of enlightenment.
It's a big one.
Yeah, it's often depicted as Siddhartha meditating under this Bodhi tree.
Yeah, under the Bodhi tree.
But what actually happened during that time?
Well, think of it this way. He had spent years searching for truth.
Years.
Exploring all these paths.
Right, pushing himself to the limits.
To the absolute limits.
Yeah.
And it's under that tree, in this state of deep meditation, that everything clicked.
So it wasn't just about sitting under a tree.
No.
It was the culmination of years of seeking.
Yeah, culminating in this profound insight.
Okay.
So tradition says that Siddhartha sat beneath the Bodhi tree, determined to reach enlightenment, but he faced incredible challenges. Inner turmoil.
What kind of turmoil?
Temptations, and even attacks from Mara.
Mara.
This demonic figure who represents all those negative forces, doubt, illusion.
It sounds almost mythical.
Yeah, it's like a battle.
Like a struggle between good and evil.
Exactly. It's a powerful metaphor for our own internal struggles. You know, those struggles we all face on that path to self-discovery.
I see.
But the important thing is Siddhartha persevered.
He didn't give up.
He did not give up. Through sheer determination.
Wow.
He broke through the veil of ignorance and achieved this state of profound understanding.
And that is the moment he becomes the Buddha.
That's the moment.
The awakened one.
Yes.
What a transformation.
It really is.
But what exactly did he awaken to? What was this profound understanding?
Well, at the heart of it were the Four Noble Truths.
Okay. The Four Noble Truths.
This is where he lays out his path to liberation from suffering.
This is the foundation of Buddhism.
It is the foundation of Buddhism, yeah.
All right, I'm ready.
Hey.
Lay it on me.
Yeah.
What are the Four Noble Truths?
All right. The first truth is that life is inherently filled with suffering.
Okay, suffering is part of life.
It is. It doesn't mean that every moment is painful.
Right.
But suffering is built in to the human experience. We get sick. We age.
We lose loved ones.
We lose loved ones. We face disappointment, frustration.
Yeah. I mean, that's something we all experience.
We all experience it.
Even those of us who might think we have it pretty good.
It's inevitable.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the first truth. What's the second?
So the second truth gets into the cause of suffering.
Okay, the cause.
And the Buddha identified this as clinging.
Clinging. Attachment.
Okay.
It's our craving for things to be different, mm-hmm. our desire for pleasure, our aversion to pain.
It's like we create our own suffering
We do.
by clinging to how we think things should be.
Exactly. We create suffering by clinging to things that are impermanent, by resisting the natural flow of life.
Wow. That's deep.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got suffering is a part of life.
Yeah.
And we kind of create our own suffering through this clinging and attachment.
Yeah, that's it.
Is there any good news?
Well, the third truth offers some hope.
Okay, good.
It says that suffering can cease.
Thank goodness we're not doomed.
We're not doomed to a life of misery.
Right.
There's the possibility of liberation.
Okay, so how do we get there? What's the fourth truth?
So the fourth noble truth, this is where we get practical.
The application.
The application, yeah. It outlines that path to the cessation of suffering.
And that is?
The Eightfold Path.
The Eightfold Path. Okay, that.
Tell me about that.
Think of it as like a roadmap.
A roadmap to liberation.
Yeah, to liberation. It includes 8 interconnected principles.
Okay, 8.
These principles guide us towards right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration.
That's a lot. That sounds like a lot of work.
It is a practice, a way of life.
More than just a set of rules.
Yeah, it's about cultivating wisdom, ethical conduct, and mental discipline. It's a journey of self-discovery.
Okay, so these 4 noble truths and the Eightfold Path.
Mm-hmm.
This is the heart of the Buddha's enlightenment.
It's his recipe for liberation from suffering.
And it's a pretty radical departure from the prevailing Vedic traditions at the time.
There's a huge shift.
Right. We talked about the Vedas earlier.
I did.
Brahman, Atman, Dharma, Karma.
Yep. All those big ideas.
How did the Buddha's teachings challenge or differ from these beliefs?
Well, he didn't reject the Vedas outright.
Okay.
But he shifted the focus.
What do you mean?
He questioned their authority as the ultimate source of truth.
So he wasn't about blindly following tradition.
Exactly. He was encouraging people to look inward.
To find truth through their own experience.
Yes, their own direct understanding.
That's a big difference.
It is. He also had some issues with the caste system.
By the caste system.
Which was deeply rooted in Vedic beliefs.
Right.
But the Buddha said that spiritual liberation...
It wasn't just for a select few.
No. It was available to everyone.
Regardless of their social standing.
Regardless of their birth, their social position. It was a radical idea back then.
It was a radical idea.
He challenged that whole notion that only the elite could achieve enlightenment.
Wow.
He said that anyone could awaken to their true nature.
Anyone could find liberation.
Exactly.
No wonder his teachings were so popular.
It was a message of hope and freedom, a path that wasn't bound by those social constraints or traditional hierarchies.
Yeah, he democratized enlightenment in a way.
He did.
So he had these radical ideas. But he also lived them.
Right? Yeah, he embodied them.
Compassion, nonviolence, mindfulness.
He walked the walk.
It wasn't just intellectual understanding.
No, it was about putting those teachings into practice.
Transforming your life.
From the inside out.
Okay, and so through this lived example,
mm-hmm.
he starts to gain a following.
Yeah, people were drawn to him, to his wisdom, his compassion, his message.
And that's where we see... the birth of the Sangha.
It's the Sangha.
This community of monks and nuns.
Who dedicated their lives to practicing and spreading the Buddha's teachings.
They were the first Buddhists.
They were the pioneers carrying the torch.
Spreading the Dharma.
The Buddha's teachings throughout India.
It's incredible how this movement started with one man's search for enlightenment.
And look where it went.
And it spread and grew, transforming the spiritual landscape.
Not just of India.
Yeah, of the whole world.
Yeah.
But we'll dive deeper into how Buddhism spread.
We will.
And how it evolved after a quick break. Welcome back to The Deep Dive.
Yeah.
We've been on this amazing journey.
We have.
Tracing the life of Siddhartha Gautama, from prince to ascetic to the Buddha.
The awakened one.
The awakened one. And we saw how those early teachings, rooted in the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path.
Right.
They started to spread with the formation of the Sangha.
The Sangha, yeah. It's incredible to think.
I know.
How teachings from ancient India.
Thousands of years ago.
Thousands of years ago reached across cultures and continents.
It's like this seed that was planted.
The seed.
You were to this huge tree.
With branches everywhere.
Branches everywhere.
Yeah.
So how did Buddhism actually spread beyond India?
That's a good question. It was a gradual process.
Not like an overnight thing.
No. It took centuries.
Centuries. Wow.
Think about those ancient trade routes across Asia.
Okay, like the Silk Road.
Silk Road, yeah. Those weren't just for trading goods.
What do you mean?
There were also these pathways for exchanging ideas, beliefs, practices.
Oh, I see.
Spreading culture.
So as merchants and travelers journeyed along those routes,
yeah,
they were also carrying Buddhism with them.
Exactly. Imagine these bustling caravanserais.
Where the
these crossroads where people from all these different cultures would gather.
Oh.
They'd share stories, share their beliefs. It's in these spaces that Buddhism started to take root in new places.
So it was organic.
It was.
Spreading through these interactions, these connections between people.
Exactly. It wasn't forced on anyone. It was a natural evolution.
And as it encountered new cultures,
yeah,
it adapted and evolved.
It had to. You know, that's why we see so much diversity in Buddhist traditions today.
Right, like Theravada and Mahayana.
Exactly.
Those are just two branches.
Two of many.
Two of many.
Each reflecting the cultures and history where they developed.
It's fascinating how Buddhism is rooted in ancient Indian thought.
It is.
Yet it could adapt to all these different settings.
That adaptability is its strength.
Ah.
And, you know, the influence wasn't just one way.
What do you mean?
Buddhism also had a profound impact on the arts, culture, and societies it touched.
You're right. Like those amazing Buddhist temples.
Oh, yeah.
Across Asia.
Yeah.
The Borobudur, the Zen gardens.
They're stunning, aren't they? The carvings, the statues, those meditative spaces.
Peaceful.
They all reflect those core Buddhist principles.
Mindfulness, compassion.
The pursuit of enlightenment.
It's like the art becomes a path.
It does.
A way to connect with deeper truths.
And it goes way beyond just the visual arts. Think about literature, poetry, music, even martial arts.
Yeah, that's true.
All deeply influenced by Buddhist thought.
Right. Those teachings on karma,
mm-hmm.
the Eightfold Path.
They've shaped ethical systems and social values in so many cultures.
Compassion, nonviolence, respect for all beings.
Those core principles have guided moral codes for centuries.
Pretty amazing. A philosophy from ancient India.
Thousands of years old.
Still resonates today.
It does. It's because it speaks to these fundamental questions we all have.
About suffering, meaning the search for peace.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the life of Siddhartha Gautama and the birth of Buddhism, what's the biggest takeaway for you?
For me, it's realizing that enlightenment, it's not some distant, unattainable goal. It's within each of us.
Right. It's a potential.
A potential we can cultivate. Through mindfulness, ethical living, and understanding ourselves and the world around us.
That's a powerful message. It's like the Buddha was showing us.
Showing us the way.
That this path to awakening.
Yeah.
It's open to everyone.
It is. No matter who we are, where we come from.
It's an invitation to start our own journeys.
To find wisdom, cultivate compassion.
Live a more meaningful life.
Exactly.
It's been an incredible deep dive. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for diving in with us.